Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Let's Watch podcast. I'm your host, James, with my co-host, Carolyn.
Hello.
And today we are talking about V for Vendetta.
Yes, which has much less violence than RRR, but a higher rating. So that is, I guess, apparent of the times.
Is it because of one scene?
Which
that
one?
That has the higher rating in the underground with the knives?
I mean, could be, but I'm pretty sure RRR had more violence than that. I think it's more of a 2022 versus 2005 issue.
Yeah, fair. Probably as well. Now, have you seen this movie before?
So here's the thing.
Uh-oh.
V for Vendetta is a preteen girl's wet dream for some reason. All of the girls that I knew were obsessed with this movie. They watched it all the time. They thought it was so clever. I watched it once at a sleepover because I hadn't seen it yet. But it was late at night when everyone's trying not to fall asleep, but everyone is falling asleep. So I was in and out. So this is the first time I saw it fully and completely all the way through. And I remember the first time watching it, first off being like, that wasn't as good as everyone said. And also, I'm confused and couldn't follow it. I thought it's because I was falling asleep. I watched it again. Not so the case. But I did figure out why the teenage girls like it so much, which I'll tell you after I read the synopsis, if you're ready for that.
Go for it.
Okay, so 2005, V for Vendetta, starring Hugo Weaving as V, Natalie Portman as a bald girl, and some other people. Yes, Evie. lots of famous British people in this movie. So it was written by, it's based on a graphic novel, but it was written for screen by the Wachowskis.
And the graphic novel was written by Alan Moore.
Yes.
Very, very famous writer.
So, in a future British dystopian society, a shadowy freedom fighter, known only by the alias of V, plots to overthrow the tyrannical government with the help of a young woman. So this is a combination of Zorro and Nazi Germany.
It's very blatant.
100%.
And I should say, neither of us have read the graphic novel this is based on, but it is Alan Moore. And if anyone is familiar with Alan Moore's other work, like Watchmen, he is very...
not subtle?
No, but he's also very blatant with what he's trying to say, right? Like, he doesn't really hide his criticisms or what he is criticizing. But anyway, I get back to what you were going to tell after you read the synopsis.
Oh, yes, about the teenage girls. So teen girls like to be edgy. And this movie, all the girls were like, ah, the symbolism. Again, seeing this as adults, we've both just agreed, it hits you over the head. There's no symbolism here. It is replication. So, but teen girls are like, ooh, so deep. And no teen girl likes to admit they like action, but we do. So we have as our male lead, a poetic, misunderstood man who speaks in code and no one understands what he's saying, but he's got a really deep, sexy voice. And he gives out roses and he has a flair for the dramatic. And teen girls love this shit. They also loved Phantom of the Opera. And the number of times I heard, he's so misunderstood. And I'm like, he crazy. It's astounding. So that is why teenage girls like this movie. I get it. I really do. Adults, there's something to be said for adults liking this movie too. But the teen girls, whew, all over it.
Well, I think it's also just, it's like a movie that's made in a way for teens, because I definitely think it is. It's not subtle. Movies don't have to be subtle, but it's like smashing you over the head with what it's saying, like that the party is using the colors of red and black, in cross shapes. Maybe it's like pretty apparent what they're going for there, and like it's not like it's obviously what they're gonna go for. And I know Alan Moore and the Wachowskis are very intelligent people that know this and are criticizing more of a comment on the current political system in the UK. And by the way, parts of this movie where they're like, this stuff's ridiculous. And I was like, oh, 2005, huh?
Just you wait. Boy,
just you wait. Like when they have like the Voice of London, for example. And I'm like, so this is just Alex Jones. Like that's who this person is. And like they're not even being that ridiculous, really. Like this is kind of mild for 2022 viewing because of that stuff. But also it's like they it wasn't a hard thing to predict, but they did hit it right on with that stuff. And now I should say I've also seen this movie before. Multiple times, and I remembered really liking it, but I was, it'd been a long time since I've seen it, probably since I was like a teenager. And yeah. Before I went in, I was just like, I was like, my memory of this movie, like the three things I remember are V, like the, his V speech, which people quote all the time. And if someone
remember the 5th of November?
No, that's the Guy Fawkes stuff. It's his, like, when he's meets Evie for the first time and he's like voraciously, it's all B words.
Yes.
And I was like, people who quote that are terrible people. Don't be like them. And then I remember bald Natalie Portman, or shaved head Natalie Portman, because my God, maybe, again, we watched two movies. We're recording these movies back to back, RRR and V Vendetta, and it maybe is two of the hottest people I've ever seen in my life in each film, where it's Rom and then shaved head Natalie Portman. I was just like, yep. My God.
I watched a movie with them together.
Yes. What movie? Up for debate.
VVV.
And then I also remembered it was like a criticism. I was like, because I was talking about this before I watched it again. I was like, I know it's written by Alan Moore, and I know my memory of being from that is like really criticizing the government. And I was like, Alan Moore is usually like not subtle, but he's like usually kind of spot on of the criticisms of capitalism and conservatism in ways. And I was like, I remembered it, the movie being that as well. But I was like, I don't know if that holds up for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I went in expecting to be kind of like rolling my eyes when V was being poetic.
I was.
Right? Yes, because it is a little ridiculous, because he is just a theater kid who's a revolutionary. But totally. Whatever. It works still, kind of.
It works if you treat this whole movie like a graphic novel, in that a lot of the imagery is also very splashy and poetic, and like all the Vs popping up everywhere, and like it's edited really well. There's lots of quick cuts and like lots of symbolism there. So you have to treat it like a superhero comic book, and then it's less eye-rolly.
Okay. Does the script actually handle the revolution and like how it is built effectively?
I mean, in my opinion, I wish that at the beginning of the movie, there was a little bit more doubt that the government might not be evil. Like, we start out and the government's already evil.
They're so blatantly authoritarian.
100%. And I kind of wish that, like, for a moment, we believed that the government was just like a normal government, and that this guy was the crazy guy. And then I wish we got to watch that switch where you realize, oh, he's kind of right and the government is kind of bad. But the evil dictator type, like, I mean, that type does exist in the world these days, but I don't know. It's not subtle. And I don't believe that, like, that the people in this society would just be chill with this government and think that V is the crazy one.
No. And, like, we don't really see much of, like, the other, like, the populace. It's mostly about Evie.
Which, like, is weird, too, when suddenly V has created a whole movement and everyone's wearing the masks and they're all inspired by him. But we never saw that happening.
No, we see it in, like, a couple scenes. And I think that's a weakness of the film, but that's more of like, I think, the script and the direction. There is that I didn't realize until after I looked it up, that until the credits, that the Wachowskis didn't direct this. It just felt so like them in so many ways. And I understand, like, the Wachowskis work in populist art, right? So they're being as big and as blatant as possible. And they're way smarter than me, but it just doesn't work that well when you're like, this movie wants to, like, show us a bunch of stuff, but it also wants to tell us the stuff that I think you should show. Like, a scene that I think effectively works, the one scene that, and it's because I remembered it going in, is, and I have issues with the entire inspector character from the beginning, but we'll get there. But when he's talking to his, like, underling, the other cop that he's talking with, and they're talking about, like, what's going to happen when they got the masks, right? And they're like, they've been sent out, and they're kind of like, this is kind of telling us, being like, hey, this is an actual movement now. But he's talking while they're showing us things that are going to happen, right? And he's like, this is what's going to happen. I can tell, I don't know specifically, but this is like what I think is going to happen. He's like, and then somebody's going to do something stupid, and it's going to just, like, further, like, violence will happen, and it will further happen with violence. And that's like kind of what that character is saying the whole time, because he's also like, what's going to happen with a bunch of people without guns go against people with guns? He's like, what usually happens, right? Like,
yeah.
The armed guards of the state are going to be the armed guards of the state. Now, my issue is that the character saying this is an armed guard of the state, who is a high-ranking member of the party, but yet somehow doubting them. And that was just, I could never get over that part for this movie for me. It was just like, this man is one of the six most important people in this party, because he's in the private meetings. He's a head of a department, because they have the media. They have the guy who runs the news. They have the dude who's the secret police. They have the other, there's the other guys as well. And they're all reporting to the chancellor. With the way they'd set this up, with this party being so authoritarian and so willing to just take people and kill them, how would a person who is so obviously doubting the party be allowed to be one of the six?
Thing
that just doesn't make sense story-wise for me. Now, I should say that the actor is doing a very good job portraying them, and I think the character is likable, even though they are a cop. And there's the whole questioning there of being like, there's separate, like, it just, I could never rationalize that in my head. It was always a constant question for me. And I don't think the movie does a good job addressing it, in any way. It felt very much like, cause they're not using any actual police logos, right?
Yeah.
So there can be the criticism then. They don't need the approval from the actual institution. And I was like, we're not going to question, or maybe I missed it, but there felt like there was no questioning of that character's motives in any
way. There was a lot of characters in here that that I wondered about their motives.
And like, the ones that I think were the most effective for me were the Chancellor, played by John Hurt, because John Hurt's an incredible actor.
Though he was evil all the time. Like, he didn't have layers either.
No, but he is doing a very, it's like, you understand how this guy came to lead because he is very charismatic.
Yeah.
I just wish the movie showed him not just being blindingly evil and actually 100%. Having the charisma, which real leaders would actually have.
Yes.
In order to be successful. And I thought Creedy was very well, because he was blatantly evil in the secret police, right? Like, he is the baddest bad. He is like the dude who's going to kill everybody.
Yeah. And he's allowed to just be evil because that is his role in the government.
But those two characters, the ones that required less investigation, were the most effective for me, for the government side. V, I wish there was more in depth into V, because like, this movie is just like touching on a bunch of stuff, and I was like, give me more.
They spend so much time talking about what happened instead of actually showing it. Like, this movie was very talky, and I found it hard to place who was who, because they were using a lot of names and a lot of places. And I don't know if I was zoning out at the beginning, but I feel like I missed something. And I don't love movies that are all talks and explosions and not a lot in between, because it either means that you're really into the talking plot and the explosions are jarring, or vice versa, that you're really here for the explosions, which is, I mean, I had just watched RRR the night before, so I was here for the explosions. But then the talk, I can't switch into talk mode and all this poetic nonsense. They just felt a little bit contradictory to me.
Well, it felt like a lot of people talking at each other instead of an actual conversation.
Yes.
And I don't think a lot of the dialogue is like super clunky, and the actors are doing their best to sell it. Like, I think Natalie Portman is really, really good in this movie.
She's awesome in this movie. I loved watching her in this, and she seemed the most real and human. She seemed the most believable.
But a thing that annoyed me specifically with her character is that you find out that she's the daughter of revolutionaries who are dead and had to go through a relearning course instead of being killed, and is someone who's dealing with a lot of trauma. And when she is used as a part of V's plot for the revolution, instead of showing it like that Evie's reluctance is because of danger for her life or from her past, instead she's played as much being like, but violence, and like, you know, you're going to hurt people and stuff. And I was just like, I just don't think the way Evie had been played until then, that's what that character would be. It very much made her feel like being like, now we need to use Evie as like a substitute, or like we're going to use her as like a metaphor for like centrists and for people who are like, but violence is bad. And I'm like, but that's not who Evie is.
Yeah.
Because she is going to, without really knowing who this person is, spray a cop in the eyes with pepper spray to save him or to help him. And then is like, wait, you're going to be violent. And it's just a bunch of stuff like this in this movie that I agree with you on that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And like, I'm willing to let it go because the performance is so good by Natalie Portman, and Hugo Weaving as well is very good, although it's mostly just his voice.
Yeah, his voice that's actually dubbed over.
yeah, except for a couple scenes.
Yeah, it says originally they had like a mic in his mask and one like in his hairline, and neither of them worked well, so they just dubbed it all.
But it is him
yeah.
in the mask. It's not a stand-in, which I think helps. But there's just like a bunch of stuff in that movie, and now I should say I still had fun and I enjoyed watching this movie, and I still liked it. It wasn't as good as I remembered because it very much felt like I watched this movie when I was a teenage boy and I was like, curious. I'm very intelligent. And now I watch it as like a 30-year-old man and I'm like, oh, okay, this is for babies.
Well, it also feels very early 2000s, where this at the time, and I don't think we should discount this, this at the time was a bit more revolutionary than it is now. Like movies that were blatantly talking about the government and what wrongs they're doing and how we shouldn't sit idly by. And like, I remember everyone thought V as a character was so fascinating because it was this like a violent revolutionary who was the hero of the story. And that wasn't common for the time. And I think the style of filmmaking was also more common because like explosions and whatever, but people were saying, oh, this isn't just an action movie. There's also some meaning behind it and some poeticism and things like that. So back then, good job, movie. Now, we've seen it done better.
Well, I mean, it's kind of I think our criticism of all of the Wachowski art, right, is that they're working in this huge medium of big summer action blockbusters, and they're trying to make movies like this, but they're constantly, their scripts are never as good as their visuals. Now, I know they didn't direct this movie, but the person who did is someone who's only worked with them and still only works with them.
Mm-hmm.
And that this is a big action blockbuster made by two trans people as well is, I think, like, they are, it's just they continually, at least for me, I'm a little disappointed, is that they're making big art and they're putting the criticisms in there either subtly or blatantly, but the scripts are just never on the level that it feels like to make me completely satisfied with the film. I'm always just like, it could have been a little bit more, it just needed a little bit more like refining, or like we needed more, some like, why did you do this scene? And it's just like there, but they're still getting this stuff made in that area, which I think has to be acknowledged as well. Like,
well, and it's also, they have really interesting worlds and really interesting political statements, and you're right, maybe the scripts aren't up to par, but they do things that no one else does.
Exactly. So it's like I like this movie. I just want it to be more. And they continually get great performances from their actors. Like every Wachowski movie I've seen, I'm never leaving the scene of being like, well, the acting wasn't good. And like, I should say that, like, there's a scene. Well, I'm curious to see what you think about what happened when V kidnaps Evie and then tortures her to free her, which is a whole thing. And we'll get to my biggest criticism, but Natalie Portman's like performance through that is like incredible. when she's getting tortured, or like when they're shaving her head and she's crying, and I'm like, you have like one take at this. Like, I don't see how you can do many others. But what did you think about
shaving the head?
Yeah. And her, like, she's like, I thought she was, it was a very good performance in that scene.
Yeah, apparently she was actually looking forward to it because she'd wanted to shave her head for a while.
Yeah,
but yeah, they did it in one take with three cameras, and they had a professional barber don V's gloves and basically be the character in that scene because they're like, we only get once, we can't fuck it up.
We also don't want to hurt you.
Exactly. Yes.
But what did you think about a segment kind of in the middle-ish of the movie where V tortures Evie in order to free her mind?
Well, I thought it was incredible from Natalie Portman's perspective. I thought it was scary. I thought it was riveting. I thought that her transformation as a character was very believable in those moments. And I loved the like letter and the story that it was intercut with. Because, I mean, I don't want to just watch someone get tortured. That's rough. But the story made me cry.
Yeah. I mean, it's knowing that the Wachowskis wrote this, it hits in a different way now.
it's completely heartbreaking and intercut with Evie, who is finding power from this story and not just finding devastation. It's heart-wrenching. And I thought she's incredible. So I like the scene for that. I was pissed when I found out that it was V who did it.
It completely undercuts it.
And I don't understand why she would ever give him the time of day later on. He broke her. He broke her as a person. I don't care what his excuses are. That's what he did. Well, that's the thing that I also don't understand. I literally wrote in my notes, how is this a love story? Because how is
doesn't
this
need to
a
be
love
there.
Story?
We don't like no. She can show up at the end and be like, oh, it's my decision now. I get to make the decision and you're going to go off and die. And she could still be like, I don't want you to go die. Right. Like, you don't have to go do this. But then to be like, but I love you. Let me kiss you. I just felt like such an undercut of her character.
Totally. And it felt very Stockholm Syndrome-y.
Yes. And like, oh, okay. So is she free?
Mm-hmm.
I had the same thing. I thought the story of the queer woman in there who it's revealed to be was actually existed in the movie and not just something V created was heart-wrenching and very upsetting.
And I love that he actually never met her too. It's not like he was trying to tell her story and wrote it down. It's like, no. She was real in every aspect that we thought she was, and she saved him in a way as well. And I thought that was really cool.
And then right before this, they have like Stephen Fry in the movie as well, who is like a very openly queer man in acting as well. And like, there's all this, like, that surrounding is like all very well done in the movie. It's just that, I have the same thing, is that it, like, afterwards, it's like when she's like panicking, when she realized that V did this to her, and she's like coming to terms with it. And then she's like, I'm leaving now. And he's like, I'd like to see you again. And she's like, maybe. And I was like, and then the next time they see each other is the train station. Where he's like, it's your choice now if you want to do this, because he's like, I want to know if I've actually like inspired someone to be like other than me to like do this. Then like, if she wants to use that, it's like her decision. But then they completely undercut it with like the romance angle, which did not exist until that moment in my mind. I was like, whoa, there's attraction here. And I didn't. It made me really upset with the movie. I was like, fuck off. Like, you don't need this.
Yeah.
And this ties nicely with like my criticisms of like the inspector character. It's just, there wasn't enough. They're like, is that guy a good guy? No, because he's like one of the heads of the party. So he's obviously has to be bad in some way, right? Like, you've shown us this party is evil and everyone else around him at that level is evil or just completely like soulless.
But see, I think he was a good guy. Like the chief inspector, I think he was a good guy. And the thing that's difficult is, I mean, the reason he was needed is because we can't have one good person, who is Natalie Portman, one, in theory, good guy who's also kind of sketchy and evil and uncomfortable, who's V. We need one other person to cheer for and relatable, because no one relates to V.
No, I understand why his character's there. And like, I get like V is unrelatable. Although the people that do relate to V and they talk about it are the same people who love Fight Club for the wrong reasons. It's like they entirely miss the message of who V is. Although maybe with the torture, maybe not. It's just like, why does the character have to be a cop when all the other cops are shown to be bad?
Yeah.
And this is looking at it from a 2022 lens. Like, obviously in 2005.
It was always the cop. It was always like one good cop.
Which was definitely like still a common trope now, but at least for me personally, I was less understanding of what like cops actually are like. They were still predominantly covered and mentioned, at least for me, as like the good guys.
Yeah.
And like, I should say the actor playing Stephen Ray is very good. He's actually playing the character. He's like the one person who's actually like being like understated in this film.
He's being normal,
subtle acting, which I think plays well with his character of being like kind of just bewildered. And I should say the one scene where he gets loud is that he's upset that he didn't catch V. So he's still like trying to catch him. He's never like, and he's the one person who you don't see at the end of the movie when they take off all the masks. So maybe there is criticism. I just couldn't get over the part that it was like, he's like one of the heads of the party. Like, there's no way they would have removed him if he was like this. If they're so willingly being able to remove everyone else. Like, they killed
if he was actually a decent guy under there.
Like, they killed the talk show host.
Yeah.
So yeah, I still like V for Vendetta. I wish more movies, at least, or movies, I guess, comic movies made now were more like this than what they are currently, but
what, like flashy explosions and not much else?
Well, at least like trying to say something, right? Like at least this movie is being like pretty blatantly criticizing the British government, for which they are still doing the shit that this movie's criticizing them for, and trying to like show being like, yeah, it's like the power should be with the people instead of the government. Like the whole thing of like, the government should fear their people, the people shouldn't fear their government. Like, yes.
Yeah.
Instead of currently where they're very much like making movies for everyone, this movie isn't for everyone.
Yeah. It could be quite polarizing in a sense.
And I like casting, like the heroine is not someone who is, or the hero of a comic movie is not the person who is like inflicting the violence. It's just another person.
Yeah, it's an average person, so it makes you feel like this could be you. It's not a superhero. It's just, it could be you.
And I think it's fair to say we both love Natalie Portman.
Oh, I love her so much. She's so good.
I haven't seen her in, what's her last, sidetrack, and then we can end this. Like, what's her last movie where you're like, wow, she's incredible in this film, but it's like just her acting. Like the last one I can think of, and I'm sure I'm wrong on this, I should pull up IMDb, but it was like Black Swan, but isn't that from like 20?
Black Swan was incredible.
Yeah, but isn't that from like 2010?
It is, yeah. Because, oh, Annihilation, she was good in that, but she isn't, she's a very different character.
Yeah, right? Annihilation.
She's very like kind of cold, right?
Jackie, which was 2016.
I never saw Jackie.
Yeah, like I'm just going to read, since Black Swan, like these are the roles she's done. I'll just read the movies. I'm Still Here, where she's playing herself. No Strings Attached, which feels like a rom-com. Your Highness, which is a terrible Danny McBride.
No Strings Attached is that Ashton Kutcher one about how they're basically friends with benefits that came out at the same time as Friends with Benefits.
Oh, okay.
With Mila Kunis and Justin Timberlake.
Oh, okay. Your Highness, which is the Danny McBride movie or comedy where she's like objectified the whole time. The original Thor, which is bad. Then I should also say that she took a little bit of a break to have children. Then she did Thor 2, which she's barely in. Knight of Cups, which I don't, is a Terrence Malick movie. And then three small films, which I don't know. Jackie, where she plays Jackie Kennedy, which is good and she's really good in it. Song to Song, which I don't know what it is. Didn't really do anything for a bit. Annihilation, which she's great in.
Yeah, she's awesome in Annihilation. But yeah, she plays a very cold character. It's more about what's happening in the world rather than the characters itself. Yeah,
Vox Lux, which is a movie that was made for the Oscars. They didn't go anywhere. Lucy in the Sky, which is a terrible film. And then Thor Love and Thunder. And then current, like at least on her IMDb, she has like four things in production right now, which is like a TV show and then two movies. Which I do, the names don't mean anything to me, so hopefully, but it's like really not a bunch for someone who is like I feel like everybody knows who Natalie Portman is. If you watch movies, you're like, oh, it's Natalie Portman, like one of the most famous people in the world.
Yeah. And she's incredible. And I think now she's being a little bit more choosy with her projects. That doesn't mean she's choosing correctly, but she is being more choosy with her projects.
I mean, and get the Marvel money, right? Like go for it.
Totally.
Like do what you want to do and get paid and, you know, live a comfortable life. But hopefully these movies she's working on are interesting in some way. But yeah, I just, when I watched this, I was just like, oh, right. She's like one of the greatest living actors. It's just like, and then you watch Black Swan and you're like, oh yes, of course. Why isn't this person in
she's incredible.
A movie every year like this? Like, I want there to be more.
Must take a lot out of her.
I mean, she commits, right? Like that's like how many other actors would shave their head for a role?
Yeah, and get excited about it.
Yeah, but I know she's always been a bit of a theater kid, so she's probably a weirdo.
She's weird.
She's definitely a weirdo. but if you haven't watched Black Swan, you should watch Black Swan.
I've seen Black Swan.
I know you have, but that was for
the audiences, yes.
Which I think is a movie that's too good to go on this list.
Oh, it is. And I wouldn't say it's underground or culty or anything, which is unfortunate because I would love to watch it again.
We can always add it later when we just want to do something. But is there anything else you want to say about V for Vendetta?
I feel like we were mean to it, and it's not as bad as we made it sound. I think it's just a letdown from the legacy that it has.
Yes, I agree completely. I still think the movie's good. I just think it's it's just not, yeah, it's just, it. I think the, I actually had this conversation recently about, like, how do you take art and think about it specifically from the viewpoint of when it was made, when you, we live in 2022, so, like, obviously, like, the world's changed.
Totally.
It's like, how do you address that? And I'm just like, I still think you have to, and I agree with our, like, what we just talked about. It's like, you have to criticize it on the level we are now, even though, like, you are aware of what it was at the time, but, like, the stuff that it's criticizing was known also at the time. So, like, that was there. It just wasn't as well known now. But yeah, I still really like the movie, and I do feel like we were a little harsher on it than, or not harsher, we sound more down on it than we are. I forgot that we forgot to rank RRR as well in our list of movies. Now, I should say both of these movies are better than Tideland.
Yes.
But are any better than Mulholland Drive, which is one. I don't think, I wouldn't put V above Mulholland Drive for sure.
I would not either. I would not put RRR above it either.
Now, where would you put it in the Sunshine Monsters, Jennifer Body area? Where would they go?
I would put them both above Jennifer's Body.
Yes. I'd put them both above Monsters.
Agreed. I would put V under Sunshine.
Agreed.
RRR. See, the thing is it good or is it just fun? I don't know. But does it matter?
No, is the answer. It doesn't matter. So I would put V is under RRR.
Yes.
I don't think RRR is a better movie than Sunshine.
No.
It's more fun.
Totally.
But I don't think it's better.
So let's slide them right under Sunshine.
Okay. So the list it's currently is Mulholland Drive, Sunshine, RRR, V for Vendetta, Monsters, Jennifer's Body, and then Tideland.
Just don't even put Tideland on the list.
Yeah, Tideland's in 100th out of a list of 7 movies. So next movie we're talking about is Warrior, but the one after that is going to be Carolyn's favorite moment. What is it going to be? Oh, no.
What Climax. Is that something weird? Climax.
Your favorite movie.
I haven't seen it.
Well, somebody you live with has seen it and loves it.
I know.
Now, we're also going to be putting these two episodes out, and then we'll be on a little bit, or Carolyn will be on a little bit of a break anyway.
Yep.
Because she's in the middle of very busy season at her job.
That I am. But you're doing things still. You have another podcast.
I do. And I can always get Adele. I will not cover Warrior and Climax without Carolyn, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But I can always get Adele or other people I know to come on, and we'll just do like little standalone episodes where we talk about something we want to talk about.
Do it.
But there actually shouldn't be that much time where Carolyn's gone, because this will take us, these two episodes will be out, and then, essentially take us into September, and then there'll be 3 weeks in September without Carolyn, essentially.
Yes. So sad.
No, well, you're super busy. Like, you obviously not going to be for the episode on the 6th or the episode on the 13th or the episode on the 20th. But I will leave it up to Carolyn if Carolyn feels like coming back and doing one on the 27th of September.
One day I'll be back.
One day Carolyn will be back. But I'll still put stuff up here, but it will not be these two movies, because Carolyn needs to take a break and actually take care of herself for once. And I will not let her until she does that.
I'm not allowed back.
You're not allowed back until you have a vacation and have some rest time. But it shouldn't actually be that long. And then we might be slowing down on this anyway and doing Oscar stuff, because tis the season.
Tis the season.
Even though I have only watched one movie so far that feels like an Oscar movie, or the Oscar movies haven't started coming out yet. It's been a weird year. What are movie theaters, and why do you go to them?
But it is festival time coming up soon, so we will be starting to hear the buzz of many a potential Oscar pick.
Everything Everywhere All at Once and Nope. Carolyn, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me at CarolynDunk93 on all the platforms. And where can they find you?
At James Looks Everywhere, except on Twitter, where the O is a zero. And you can send us an email at letswatchpod@gmail.com. And Carolyn, just go have a nap.
I will. A pee, a water, and a nap. Okay.